The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode 466 for Sunday, September 15th, 2013. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where we do all kinds of stuff together to learn more about the Mac, Apple products, Apple stuff, technology in general. Really, the point is to collectively enhance our technological lives. Coming to you this morning, this bright, sunny Sunday morning here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in chilly, somewhat chilly, Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun.
It's brisk, John. It's brisk. It's refreshing. It's invigorating is what it is. Or maybe that's the caffeine. I don't know. I should open the window, though, because it's nice. Tell them hi. Say hi one more time. I'm just going to open the window next to me because it's really nice out.
Oh, hi. Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. Getting a little breeze coming in here. That was good, John. Thanks. Yeah, you mumbled astutely. Excellent diction. let's get right into the show, shall we, John? Actually, first, did you want to say something about our neighbors to our west here, our brothers to our west?
Oh, man. Yeah, so some of you may know Colorado's been having a real rough time here. Actually, our colleague, Jeff Gamet, is out there among many other people.
Many thousands of others, yep.
And they had some really just ridiculous flooding out there. I mean, Jeff sent out some pictures there. I mean, roads got washed away. It is just a mess. So if you want to help those folks out there, I think we'll link to it here. You know, I'd maybe donation to the local Red Cross or other organizations. I gave to the local Red Cross there. But yeah, it's amazing what too much water can do.
I mean, it's crazy. Roads, his pictures
disappeared. It was like, whoa.
Yeah, his pictures are sobering, but also, I mean, it's just astounding that this can actually happen. Yeah, I mean, there's somewhere a river and you can sort of tell it used to be a road. There's somewhere now that it's sort of draining away, you can see half a road left. He was telling us during the staff meeting on Wednesday when he was effectively trapped, you know, in his house, that neighbors were outside shoveling dirt out of their driveways and into the street so that they could build up enough of the street back so that they could get their four wheel drives and get out to, you know, a more main road. So, but yeah, yeah. So yeah, definitely. All right. Now let's do this. Tony actually kicks us off, with what I love. He had a problem. He sent an email that 10 minutes later, maybe 2 hours later, but you know, give or take, he sent in the solution, which is awesome. And, I love it when we're able to solve problems. And so we will share. Tony's question was, I have a mid or late 2011 MacBook Pro running the latest OS, and I have a recurring problem. My mouse and trackpad work to move the cursor around, but at some point, the ability to select anything is gone. I have to use the trackpad to save and exit apps and do at least one restart to get normal operation back. I have Total Finder running and also another language keyboard in the background. I will also note that my interface agent runs wild from time to time. I'm assuming that's a process he's seeing. Might have something to do with leftover process remnants from the Unity game engine, Red Crucible, blah, 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 because none of that matters, because we know the answer. And this happens to me regularly, and it often takes me, you know, a good 15, 20 minutes to realize, oh yeah, dum-dum, that's what happened. And I always say dum-dum because once I know the answer to something, I should know it again in the future. But the first time it happens, you're not a dum-dum. It's just an interesting thing. Tony's solution. He says, I forgot that I had my Magic Trackpad enabled and paired, and something was resting up against it. The Magic Trackpad, the entire surface is clickable. So if you have something of sufficient weight resting on it, it will be in fully clicked state permanently, and therefore nothing else can register a click or an unclick. Is you know, mouse up is what you're looking for there, because we already have mouse down. So sometimes the symptom will be what Tony describes. Sometimes it'll be that things just like get selected all over the place. And so, yeah, thank you, Tony. A great start to the show here, because it's something that happens to many, if not all of us, at one time or another. Good stuff. You don't run a trackpad. Do you have a magic trackpad, John?
No, actually, mom has one.
Okay.
I got her one because actually I think it's time for her to get a new machine. Actually, yep. It's time for many of us to get new things. I'm going to be upgrading some of my hardware soon, I think. So
awesome.
Actually her trackpad on her MacBook, we got her a refurb. It's several years old now, but it all of a sudden started failing.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, how can we solve this here other than getting it fixed? So it's out of AppleCare, and I don't know if it's worth replacing the trackpad on the computer. But I'm like, oh, here's a good gift opportunity, and basically got her a magic trackpad, and she now uses that to navigate.
I would encourage every Mac owner, especially desktop Mac owner, to strongly consider getting a magic trackpad. Not only is it a great UI, it also allows you to do a lot of things that are built into the OS, like switching between apps and the zooming and pinching and all that stuff. There's so much of that Apple has built into the OS now, partially because it came over from iOS, but also because we have these trackpads on all the laptops. They're just built in, and having that functionality on the desktop is excellent. I go back and forth. I have a Magic Mouse, and you can do some of that stuff on the top surface of the Magic Mouse. I have that for my left hand and the Magic Trackpad on the right, and I basically wait until the battery dies in one, and then I use the other, and it keeps me from getting too much repetitive stress injury. But yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. All right, John, you want to take us to Joseph?
Yes.
All right.
Lends itself to quite a few tips here, I think.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Joseph, or Joe, writes, I create a group in address book. And yes, address book, not contacts. I create a group in address book. It looks okay. I close and exit the address book. I then open up a mail window. Mail has been running. And want to create a new email. I click on the icon to show addresses, and my new group isn't there. This has happened before. What's going on, and how can I create a group and then be able to use it from within mail? The group finally appears after I shut down mail. It's odd that you have to do that, but there are other oddities about mail. So a few things here. So number one, I was like, well, what is this address icon you speak of? And the thing is, at least on my installation of mail, I did not have that icon. It looks to be something that's not part of the default toolbar. So one little tip here is if you do want to bring up that window that will show you addresses and groups and all that, if you go to view, customize toolbar, you can actually select it. It shows a little head. You can actually drag that to the toolbar and make that something that's available. Another way to get to that window is to, let's see here, window menu, address panel. And there's also a keyboard shortcut for that. So that's number one. So I tried to duplicate this. I was doing this on my 10.8 machine. And so I tried this. So I brought up the address window, then went to contacts, because I'm doing this on 10.8, and created a new group. When I switched over to contacts, actually that address window disappeared from mail. Like, oh, that's... But that's okay. So I created a new group and then went back to mail, and I looked in the address window in mail, and it was there. So I'm like, what's going on here? So I did have one suggestion. It didn't fix this problem, but I think it's just something, a general troubleshooting tip here to try to solve. So I thought there was maybe a data synchronization issue, that it wasn't writing the data properly. And actually, there is a place where you can look to see if things are working properly. And it's actually in your home directory, library, saved application state, com.apple.addressbook.savedstate. And within that directory, you can see if data is being written. And in this case, in my case and both his case, it was being written. The time and date stamp was accurate. So that was not the issue here, though it could be the issue, I think, for some people.
Yeah. No, it's a good thing to check. But you found the solution. Yeah.
Yeah, the solution,
not the solution, but the answer, I should say.
well, the solution here is a fish shake at Apple. Then he got back to me and said, oh, no, no, I'm running 10.7.5. And I'm like, oh, okay. So because I tried this on my 10.8 machine, I then went to my 10.7 machine, which I'm on right now, and I tried to do the same thing. And guess what? I was able to duplicate the behavior. It doesn't work right. So the answer is either mail or address book on 10.7 is broken. Is the only conclusion I can come to.
Well, yeah, it sounds like there
and
was
then
a bug
I added
in it.
A group. Yeah, I added a group, you know, from within address book and then looked in mail and it sure enough didn't show up just like it didn't for him. But when I quit everybody and start or actually, yeah, quit mail and then started mail up again, then it appeared in the mail address window. So I don't have it. I think it's just the implementation on 10.7, probably address book.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't fish shake at Apple. It's a bug that they solved. You just need to upgrade to Mountain Lion, which I no, seriously. I mean, yeah, you know, if you're choosing to stay with an old version of the OS, then you're choosing to pick the problems and bugs that it has, knowing full well that Apple has iterated beyond that. And in terms of 10.7 versus 10.8, I would go 10.8 100% of the time. 10.7 was a disaster. Lion was horrible. And Mountain Lion's been way better. So I would, yeah, without question.
I may upgrade my mini. And as you suggested here, I may virtualize a 10.7 installation just so we can help troubleshoot these things like I did here.
Yeah. And that's the nice part. You can virtualize 10.7 officially. And this has only to do with the license agreement that Apple probably isn't going to bother to pay lawyers to upgrade or update. 10.7's license agreement totally allows it to be virtualized, which means you can run it inside of Parallels or VMware Fusion, right? Or various other virtualization engines. And it works great in at least those two. I haven't tried it in the others, but it works great in those two. Snow Leopard 10.6 and prior do not allow virtualization for the client version. You can virtualize Snow Leopard server, but the regular client install, you can't by the license agreement, and Parallels and VMware follow that license agreement. However, if you have some skill with Google, you can probably hunt and find a way to make Snow Leopard virtualize in at least one of those programs. So I'll leave it at that. I don't have the link in front of me. Otherwise I would just share it, but I know I have found it in the past via Google. So there you go. So I do. Now it is time, John, to talk about our first sponsor, which is a returning sponsor here, Squarespace. And the first thing I'm going to tell you is between now and the end of September, if you use coupon code MGG9, at Squarespace, you get not 10% off like our previous coupons have been, but 20% off whatever you buy when you apply that coupon. Now, why would you want to buy Squarespace? Well, that's easy. They are more than just a web hosting company. They are a place to put yourself out there on the web without having to do any hard work. I have in the last couple of months, I've actually set up two websites with Squarespace. And the first was a blog, my Dave the Nerd blog that I ran on WordPress and on a WordPress install on our own servers. And I just imported it into Squarespace. And the cool part is once I pulled it in, I can apply their designs and their templates. And their templates are so cool. You can just drag stuff in, literally dragging pictures in from the desktop, and it puts them in where you want them. You can change the format really easily. There's none of this messing around. You just go to their template viewer. You pick a template and it magically applies it throughout your site. And then the second site that I did was we're hosting one of the bands that I'm in. We've put together an event at the end of September on the 28th. And we're doing it for those of you local in New Hampshire here. We're doing it at the Rochester Opera House. And it's just a bunch of bands. It's benefiting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And really, it's just a family-friendly night out of rock and roll. There's three bands playing, and one of them's a kids band, and it's cool. But we wanted to be able to sell tickets online, and for whatever reason, the place where we're doing it couldn't do it, or it would cost too much. And so I thought, wait a minute, Squarespace. And they do. They have a partnership with Stripe, which is an online payment engine. And it's so easy to set up. I mean, I literally start to finish set up this page. It's at flingrocks.com. You can go see it. It's the slash tickets page, but everything, there's only the one page there because I wanted it single purpose. But I can move that around and I can change it anytime I want, because that's how flexible Squarespace is. But I did that, the whole thing, including signing up for Stripe and getting payments processed. I did the whole thing in about an hour. I mean, you'll see the page. There's nothing to it, but look through it. You'll see there's a shopping cart there. It tracks orders. It gets information. It fills out the forms that I want with the information that I need. It processes your credit card or however you're going to pay. And all of that is thanks to Squarespace, because it just they have all these modules and you just plug them in and you just say go and it goes. So really cool stuff. And it's just, you know, I've been doing this web stuff for what, 15 plus, maybe 20 years. And I certainly could code all this stuff manually, but that doesn't mean I want to at all.
What are you, nuts?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And this was just so easy. I just go in and I say, check, I want a shopping cart. And then I can pick what I want the shopping cart to look like. I can upload custom images for the products. And it just worked. It was awesome. So again, go sign up. You can get started without paying a dime. They do have a 2-week free trial. But so go sign up, start playing with it, see what you like, and then just make sure you place your order before the end of September and use that MGG9 code, because that will get you 20% off, and we all like a discount. So there you go. Thanks to Squarespace, squarespace.com. And I believe that brings us on to perhaps the tip section of the show, John. Simon, we'll kick it off with Simon's tip, because it's such a... It's one of these simple ones, but it's so handy, and I always forget it's there. He says, I have and hate Microsoft Office 2011 for the Mac. Ever open a file from Outlook and it's read only or in the Outlook temp folder and you're unsure of its name or its real location? Here's a tip. And this tip works in nearly every Mac app that has windows that open documents that are, you know, available in the Finder. Option click or right click on the document title and you can see its full name and path. Better still, click on the first folder down and you are taken to that folder. So you just go up to where the title of the document is and you option click there. And did I say option click? I meant control click. I was editorializing as I went because he said right click and not everybody has a mouse with two buttons. So I was, you know, control click is the right thing to do. And that will show you a whole drop down and you can actually navigate. It'll show you the whole folder structure and you could go to any folder there, including the top level hard drive. But like Simon says, just go to the first, the top thing is going to be the document file. The next one down is the folder that contains it. And that can often be a really handy thing, especially like this. If you double click something and it's open from mail, even if it's Mac mail, you don't have to be using Microsoft Office. Double click an attachment in mail and it opens in, say, Pages, right? You might want to be able to get to where that file is. This is how you do it. You right click or you control click on the top and it'll drop down on the title bar of the menu and it'll drop down a little drop down and you can navigate there. It's good stuff. I always forget that's there, John.
Sweet.
Yeah. Do you use that? You forget it's there too.
I forget it's there too.
Mm-hmm.
I've done something similar in I use the similar functionality in Spotlight.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's sometimes if you hold down a certain key. Yeah, sometimes Spotlight, when you find something, you don't necessarily know where it is. Sometimes it'll tell you where, but not very specifically. But if you hold down something, I think it's Option, it'll drill down and tell you where it's at.
That's good. Cool. I love these little tips. They're some of my favorite things.
The thing is, just, you know, just keep pressing those different modifier keys and you'll find all sorts of great stuff.
No, it's totally true. Yeah. 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 There's a lot of stuff like that. And in iOS, not as much, but the tap and hold can sometimes bring up some interesting things. Like if you're in mail and you want to see your drafts, tap and hold on the compose button, it'll bring you to your drafts. And there's other things like that in iOS as well. So it's, you know, it's, and iOS 7's coming out this week. So there's some interesting stuff coming in that too.
Really?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. I'm ready for the software update, dog pile.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That comes out Wednesday, I guess. And we've been putting together an article at TMO that we'll publish on Wednesday that has that kind of a ton of our favorite tips that we found, throughout the beta process and now obviously with the GM, but I will say I'm totally stoked with how it's running. The GM's running on my iPad 3 and my iPhone 5.
You're not supposed to talk about that.
It's okay. I think it's okay. it's all right. Okay now. Yeah. One thing I will say, a little spoiler for the article coming up, because thank goodness they've added this. You know how with an IMAP account, John, in every previous iteration of iOS 5, you could list all, if you knew the trick, you could put in a comma separated list of all your email addresses in the email address field. And then you could pick from them. Right. Right. Just like you can do in Mac Mail. But in iOS 6, the order that you put them in that list no longer mattered. It wouldn't prioritize based on the order. It came up with some hash that was unbeknownst to mortals or something. I don't know. But in iOS 7, it actually gets better than it is on the Mac. You get a full list. You can edit it. You can reorder it. You can pick which is the priority. So it's all good. So there's one little teaser.
Yeah, that was always kind of broken on iOS.
Yeah. And now it seems broken on the Mac because the Mac, you have to still do the comma separated hack. It doesn't have this explicit UI for it. So.
Well, I think the other problem with doing it on iOS is when you came to the screen where you could type that in, there was no comma on the keyboard.
There was, that's correct. I always had to go to the, I either had to copy it from my Mac and send it to myself in an email and copy paste, or, I would go into the notes app or something and type it there. And yeah,
it's the same thing I do is type it in, put it in a comma, then copy it and paste it into the mail thing. So that's good.
No, this is so much better. You're going to be blown away. Yeah.
Excellent.
So it's good. But you'll need a new phone, I think, John, right? Oh no, the iPhone 4 will run. Oh, run iOS 7. That's right. Yeah. We've got it on the iPhone.
Yeah.
Right here.
But I'm still almost certainly getting the 5S.
Good. Yeah, me too. Yeah, I don't know that
I'm still weighing my options of what to do with the 4. Because actually,
dude, sell it to Gazelle.
Hold on. Well, the thing is, I just went to the Verizon site and I went through pretending I was going to get a 5.
Yeah.
And at one point they said, oh, well, if your phone is in good shape, we'll give you $110. That's the good news. The bad news is it's, well, not so bad. A Verizon gift card.
Okay.
Basically would pay my bill. So if they're truly going to give me $110 for my old one, then Gazelle's they have the second best offer that I've seen. So
I have $132 cash on hold with Gazelle for the iPhone 4 that we will most likely unload.
Really?
Here for, it's a 32 gig black iPhone 4.
Okay, 16. So
Yeah, 16 gig iPhones are tough. I for those of you, so I've been through it all. We have every size iPhone in the house here. The last two times I have bought a 64, and prior to that I bought 32s. And this last time around, when my daughter got an iPhone 5, she got a 16. I would not do the 16. If you want to hold any amount of apps or music on there, you're running up against a wall and you're constantly managing, especially with photos and that sort of thing. The 64, though, I don't think I've ever used more than half of my space on there. So I think the 32, certainly for our use cases amongst all of us here in the Hamilton household, the 32 is the sweet spot. But I don't know. I might still buy the
64. I got by with 16, though I would agree, because I think you could also, if you wanted to get but I think now the 4S that they offer is only 8 gigs, then I definitely could not.
No, I think the 4S is 16, right? Is the new 4S 8? You might be right. Yeah, you might be right.
So I'm good with 16. Maybe I'll get 32. I'm still pondering.
I would highly recommend the 32. Because especially with photos and stuff, I mean, you're going to a much bigger camera image size wise.
Mm.
Right.
Good point.
So, you know, that's where we're
all right, back on track.
Hang on. I got to see now. You're right. The iPhone 4S that's online is 8 gigs. So, forget that. There you go. Okay. Yeah. Getting us back on track. All right. Cindy has a, take it away.
Hey guys, I have the premium app and I tried to email by clicking the link. I don't know if you ever got anything because I never got a chance to enter anything. It just went away. Like the screen would come up and it would go away. It might be my own problem here, but I thought I would tell you about it. But that's not really why I'm calling.
Yeah, if you do have problems with the app, though, please do let us know. And we always loop Corey in and we're usually able to get them solved. So thank you for buying the app and thanks for using it. It is a handy thing. Sorry you're having trouble, but we will. We are here to help. It's what we do. And speaking of that.
Last episode, not this most frequent one that I'm listening to now, but the one before that, you mentioned about someone wanted to know how to get on files off their Mac when they're elsewhere. And I've been using this software called Presence that works pretty well. When I go to my clients, I can log in and I can see my whole computer and grab my files. I can't work off my computer at home, but I can grab my files, including all of my external drives, which I have quite a few, and everything. So it's come in handy for me a few times. So maybe check it out. All right. Thanks for the show. Bye.
Thanks, Cindy. Thank you very much. That's handy. We will put a link to that everywhere that we know how to do so in the show notes and also inside the enhanced chapterized version of this show, because Michael Johnston is the king and he puts all that together for us. Michael, of course, as we always say at the end of the show, he's the host of We Have Communicators and also runs getappler.com. So thank you, Michael. And thank you, Cindy. Good stuff. Yeah, I took a look at that Presence thing. It's their motto is this is how the cloud should be. It's $40. You can download a free trial and mess with it. But it's interesting. It's what Back to My Mac should be, because it still drives me crazy that, you know, we have all these great iOS devices and no way to access our Macs. And I know Apple says, well, you have iCloud with documents in the cloud, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Whatever. That doesn't actually work for most people because we don't like compartmentalize our lives that way. Sometimes there's just a file on our Mac we need to get to. So, you know, this stuff is good. It's necessary. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, I will also take this opportunity to say hello to everyone in the chat room and Michael in the chat room, of course, at MacGeekab.com/stream. And, it's great having this chat going because you guys, help us with filling in the gaps that we might miss without having to wait a week. So it's awesome that the people in the chat room help us all, including those of you that aren't there, and that's okay. But Michael in the chat room, reminds us with sizing of the space on your iPhone. It says, don't forget that the iPhone is a fantastic HD video camera. And he's right. It's awesome. But that also chews up room. So making sure you have enough headroom at all times to just be able to record some video is a good thing. So there you go. Yes. 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 All right.
I'll just solder in a bigger RAM chip when I need to.
Oh, you know, all right. So let's talk about soldering here. This reminds me of a problem I'm having, John. I actually want your opinion on this, although, you know, I think I know where I am. So my daughter has one of my old MacBook Pros. It's the one that you and I both used to have, right, John? You still have, right? You have a Core 2 Duo MacBook Pro or no?
I have the MacBook Pro 15-inch early 2008, the one of the last non-unibody.
Okay, so that's what this one is. That's what she has. And it hand me down for me. Now, her hard drive in it has been flaky. And, you know, it starts up and then at random times it just grinds to a halt. And you have to turn it off and turn it back on. So I like, okay, I got to replace the drive. But I had I had had a Runcore SSD in that thing, but the Runcore SSD had gotten flaky. And so I had it replaced and I'd never put this back in because she needed the space. But then I realized, well, she doesn't need the space as well. And so I can go from a 256 gig spinning hard drive to a 128 gig SSD and she'll actually be in good shape. So I took it apart and put the SSD in and same problem. And then I remembered, oh, this is exactly the symptoms I had with the SSD prior that we have since replaced. So this is not a problem with the hard drive. And the hard drive I took out now works flawlessly if I boot from USB. So not the drives. So many of you on Twitter suggested to me when I posted about this that perhaps it's the cable because you'd seen hard drive cables go bad. So I went down to our friendly local authorized Apple service center and they were able to provide me with a hard drive cable for this, which very handy. Thank you. No, that didn't do it. I replaced that. So I'm assuming it's the motherboard. And one of our Twitter followers that I haven't tried this yet suggested that perhaps disconnecting the DVD drive, she had seen that with a client's machine. Now, I don't think the DVD drive on that machine is in this is on the same bus, though, John, right? I mean, I think the DVD is on the SATA bus. The hard drive's on the SATA bus. And
this machine, yes, this machine was one of the last where the DVD interface was, I think it's just an ATA bus. But yeah, it's not. So the future, as far as I know, machines that came after this one, both the DVD or both the optical drive and the hard drive are SATA. But, but this one, yeah, is not. So
I figure what I'm going to do is open it up again, disconnect the DVD drive, put it back together and test it because why not? It's just time at that point. And assuming that doesn't work, then I might also safely assume that the DVD drive would, if you could boot from that and run from that, and you might know where I'm going with this, John, that might actually work just fine. If disconnecting it doesn't solve my hard drive problem, then perhaps the two are unrelated enough. And I just got to kind of eschew the SATA bus and move over to the slower bus that actually works. And if that's the case, then maybe what I'll do is put in one of those, if I can get one cheap, I'll put in one of those, you know, conversion kits that takes your optical drive and turns it into a hard drive bay. And I'll just put the hard drive over there and get the machine back up and running. So that's my plan, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, actually looking in here, yes. So looking in Mac Tracker, a splendid utility to tell you what's happening with the machine.
Yeah.
The hard drive interface in this machine is unfortunately crippled 1.5 gigabit per second SATA. And the optical drive is a Ultra ATA /100 running at UATA 66. Why did they? Yeah. So I don't know if you'd want to put it on that Ultra ATA bus.
Well, see, here's the thing, and I've said this before, and this machine was the one that proved it to me. I had a 256 gig hard drive in the SATA bus. I connected a USB case to it with one of the first generation SSD drives, and the speed blew me away. So the USB bus is dog slow compared to every other bus in that machine, and yet it still was way faster than running off the hard drive internally. So I'm feeling like with this machine, if I do that, I might be okay. One of these OptiBay things, they're pretty cheap, it looks like. I mean, it looks like I can get one for like $30.
Yeah. Or it may be time to sell it for scrap and upgrade. Yeah,
I'm not convinced that...
You're sounding like me now.
It's funny because as I was going through this, I thought, wait a minute. This is actually really funny. You know, I chide you about holding on to your old stuff. But the reality is I hold on to probably way more old stuff than you do. I just have people that need it. So I pass it down and then I get the new stuff, right, that I use for me. But if I didn't keep this churn of new stuff coming in, I'd have a real problem because I'd have to buy new stuff for my family, right? You know, because they need these things. So this is interesting. Yeah, but maybe I'll just get one of these. These are cheap. I'm willing to spend $30 on this. I could do that.
Yeah. What I've had happen on this one, which is making me lean towards getting a new one, is this one I have a problem where every once in a great while, the up arrow gets stuck.
Okay.
And so I think it's something flaky with the USB bus on this, or the keyboard, because that's all plugged into USB last day I checked. Or they want to reseat the connector, because I remember, because I did have to replace, because as you recall, the keyboard on this was replaced due to a tragedy. So, but there is a connector that you push onto the motherboard, like a little square connector there, and it may need to get reseated.
Yeah.
All right.
So, but anyway, I have one last question about this, because I've been in and out of this machine a bunch, and I'm going to go in and again. So when you're taking apart those machines, you flip it onto, you close it and you flip it onto the lid and you unscrew all the various screws. And thank goodness to iFixit for their instructions. Otherwise, I'd be lost. And thank goodness to my son for helping me most of the times that I've been in there, because it's actually a fun project to do with someone else. Then once you get all the screws out, you flip it over, you open up the lid, and you start prying the what effectively holds the keyboard, the top of that case. You start prying it up from the back, and you come toward the front, and then toward the front, it like there's these clips that are really hard to get off. How do you do it? What's your MO for pulling that open, John?
Oh, I typically will pull the cable and then
yank.
And pretty much take the front and push it all the way back. And I think that's what you're asking. It's a delicate operation. You got to, because it feels like you're going to break something. And I think actually, if you're not careful, you may.
Yeah.
Trying to take the whole top case assembly there.
Right.
So you reach in
and undo the cable for the keyboard first and then yank it off. Is that right?
Then the thing has more motion. Yeah. I guess the other way to do it is you could try to take it off and not pull the USB or keyboard connector, but
right.
Yeah, that's difficult. This machine is a bear to work on.
Yeah. And in the chat room, Mac Vader is saying, and you need to keep track of where you got the screws from. So, because he said when he did it, he had some screws left over. So I know we've talked about various ways to do it. The way I do it is I print out the instructions from iFixit, right? And then I have a roll of Scotch tape there. And as I go through for each instruction, I put the screws on the Scotch tape and stick it to the piece of the section of the instructions where those screws came out from. And it has worked flawlessly for me thus far. So that way I know I'm not guessing. Wait a minute. These screws for that. Nope. They're stuck right there. And there's not so many screws. I think for this, the biggest step is 6 screws. And I was able to line those up, and you don't want to take the sheet of paper or the sheath of paper and whip it all around or anything, but if you're careful, the screws stick around.
I do the same thing. Well, I have the printout, but what I do is I have an ice cube tray nearby, and for each step, I'll put the screws in one of the
parts
just got the ice cube tray in order. Right. And then when I put it back together, go in reverse.
Yep.
So
that works too. Yeah. So. All right. Finally, I can get us back on track. Thanks for indulging me there, John. I'm coping with the loss of the potential loss of this machine, which inevitably means the potential loss of more money because I need to buy a machine. So I don't know what that means. But anyway, we'll figure it out. Oh,
I'll sell you mine for parts.
If you don't have ice cube trays, and I might actually take you up on that, John. If you don't have ice cube trays, which we don't, I was actually looking for some the first time we went to do this week and couldn't find them. Again, from the chat room, Blatboy says he uses an egg carton. Same concept, but you might actually have one of those in your house if you don't have ice cube trays. So there you go. All right. Now back to more tips. I think, where are we on time here? Now I'm totally lost. We can do this. Lucas writes, and he says, always love the podcast. Perhaps the only feature that keeps me hooked on Firefox is bookmark keywords. As far as I can tell, that functionality isn't built into Chrome or Safari. It suddenly dawned on me. And by bookmark keywords, what he means is typing a little shortcut and having it expand whatever bookmark that's associated with. He says, it suddenly dawned on me that I could do something similar on iOS using the keyboard shortcut feature under Settings, General, Keyboard, Shortcut. Enter a URL as the phrase and a short string of characters as the shortcut. Then type in the shortcut into iOS's Safari, and bam, it expands into the URL. That's good stuff right there. Thank you, Lucas. It's good. I like that. Right, John? Good?
Absolutely.
All right, cool. That's how we roll here. All right, one more tip before we get into back into more questions. Lee writes, a couple of shows back, I heard you mention that John didn't have an Apple TV, but Dave, after initial reservations, had fallen in love with his. I'm totally in Dave's camp, but during that discussion, you mentioned that AirPlay was only for Apple devices. Not so. Check out Air Parrot. It's an app that enables AirPlay on Windows and earlier Macs, which Apple has not built AirPlay support into, i.e. my 2010 MacBook Pro. He says, I use it at work in seminar rooms. It totally works and is seamless to use. Join the Wi-Fi network to which the Apple TV is connected. Click on the Air Parrot menu bar icon. Choose the Apple TV listed, and bam, the computer is on the screen just like AirPlay. It's a no-brainer to have on hand. And more generally, now Apple TV has Vivo. It's twice as useful. Buy one, John, says Lee. He says, additionally, the subject of Blu-ray DVD ripping seems to have come up, and the best ripper converter around that I've found is from PavTube. And I think we've mentioned that one before, but I'd forgotten about it. PavTube iMedia converter for Mac. It's weird because the page makes it look like one of those total spam DVD ripper things that we've all sort of come to, but we've had enough of you recommend it that I'm, you know, I don't believe it's that. I think it's the real deal. There you go. He says it's regularly updated, deals with every video format I've ever come across, and can spit out video for any device you can imagine, all with easy to use presets, but with customization under the hood if you want. It also lets you rip sections of discs easily. Great for teachers or presenters who just want to show clips. So there you go. Air Parrot and PavTube. And I think we've probably mentioned both of those, but they're the kind of things that that they tend to come up. So it's good. It's good, right, John?
It's fantastic.
It's how we do it. It's how we rock it here. Any thoughts on that stuff? Have you had any more? I know you're in the potentially in the market for buying a bunch of new Apple hardware. You're going to throw an Apple. Would you like an Apple TV with that?
No.
Okay.
No, I'll just take fries with that.
Okay. yes. Somebody had a funny, whatever. I don't know. It's not important.
I don't need it. My TiVo keeps me happy.
I'm with you. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, there is a cool thing that I did last night. We wanted to watch a movie. We actually wanted to watch Stripes, which the kids had never seen, and I'm constantly telling them to lighten up, Francis. So I figured
that's
it was
the fact. That's the fact.
That's
Jack.
The fact, Jack. That's right. Yeah, it's a great movie. But anyway, I had it on our disc station, and we had the Apple TV up because we were showing some clips. Skylar played a gig yesterday, and I had videotaped some of it and all that good stuff. And so I thought, wait a minute, I don't have to switch back to the TiVo to go via Stream Baby and like pull all the stuff off. If you have movies on your Synology disc station, which I know you have one of those, I don't know if you have any movies on it, and you run their video player, video indexing service, which is built in, so why wouldn't you? And then you get their free DS video app for your iDevice. You can play movies direct on your iDevice. You can download movies to your iDevice. It works great. But you can also tell it to play movies on your Apple TV. And the magic is it doesn't stream it through your iPhone. You have to start it with your iPhone. But it streams from the disc station directly to the Apple TV, presumably using some of this, you know, semi-open tech like Air Parrot does or whatever to sort of circumvent Apple's lock on getting stuff to the Apple TV. And it just streams directly. So once you start it with your iPhone, you could turn your iPhone off or you could leave the house and it's just going straight from the disc station to the Apple TV. So we watch the movie that way and it works great. You can, and once it's started, you can use whatever remote you have with the Apple TV to pause it and all that good stuff. So I like it. It's good. All right, John. So see, there's more reason to get it, right? No, maybe not. You're set up for it. It's good. Our second sponsor for this show is Barebones Software at barebones.com. And you know them as the makers of BB Edit, a world-class text editor that works great for programmers, but also works great for anyone really at any level. It's a fantastic way to count things, count characters or words in text, count lines, sort things, edit stuff. If you have it on an FTP server, it just works. They are also the makers, bare bones, of Yojimbo. And Yojimbo 4.0 is out. It works. It's updated for Mountain Lion. And most importantly, for all of us that are Yojimbo users or would want to be Yojimbo users, syncing is back. They found and worked with a third-party core data syncing service because Apple's was not robust enough for Yojimbo-type data. Hopefully Apple will get there at some point, but Yojimbo works. You sign up with the syncing service and your data syncs. And this show is a living testament to the fact that it works because I organized the show on my iMac in the office, put all the data into Yojimbo. And when I got here this morning, the data was up here just like it's supposed to be. And actually, I've been beta testing this version of Yojimbo for 6-8 months now. And it's obviously I've been beta testing it for a year. And with Apple's engine, I had to do it manually. And with this third party engine that they found called Wasabi Sync, it works awesome. So I highly recommend you check that out. That is Yojimbo and BB Edit from Barebones at barebones.com. Check it out. And when they got free trials for both of those out there. And when you are ready to buy, make sure you let them know Mac Geek Gab sent you. We appreciate it. They appreciate it. And you'll appreciate it. I hope. All right, John, let's dig into a couple more questions before our Sundays take us away. Richard Right. So actually, Richard did more than write. Richard said,
"Hey, Dave and John. Richard here from Boulder, Colorado. I have a question about tethering a laptop to an LTE-enabled iPad and regarding the data usage on the laptop. So we went on a vacation. We fire up enable our data on my wife's iPad whenever we go on vacation. We do it a couple of times a year. She did it when she went to Europe as well. Actually worked pretty nicely. And in this case, we went to the Oregon coast, went to Portland, then to the Oregon coast. And we came to the end of our 2 gig block of data. We realized we used it up pretty quickly when we went onto Skype and did some video chats. It actually auto-renewed for another month. I guess it does that if you don't watch out, which was fine because we wanted another 2 gigabytes. But then over a period of about a day, we managed to use it all up, and we were pretty careful as far as not using Skype. So the culprit had to be my wife's MacBook Pro. And I'm wondering if there's any way for us to limit the bandwidth that MacBook Pro would use for that session that it's tied into the LTE connection on the iPad. I think I've looked at this before to see if there's a program that says, okay, this program is using this much bandwidth. I guess it would be nice to say, okay, I only want to use the internet for this particular program. I don't know, iStat menu, maybe some fancy little programs, a program that exists. Anyway, if you could comment on that, that would be fantastic. Thanks very much.
Hey, you bet, Richard. And as we said before, I hope you're kind of in the thick of it out there. I hope you're doing well with the flooding in Colorado as well. It's interesting, you know, on the iPad or the iPhone, you have the ability to say, hey, if I'm on cellular data, you know, limit your network usage to these functions, don't download music or, you know, other things. But as soon as either of those devices, and of course your Mac, is connected to a Wi-Fi network, it has no way of knowing what the source of the internet connection on that Wi-Fi network is. So it has no way of being intelligent about limiting its bandwidth. Now, with all this hardware being made by the same company, Apple, it would be possible for them to say, you know, in some way, hey, you know, treat this like an LTE connection, be careful, but that doesn't exist. So you wind up with this problem. And even background things, like if you're set up to automatically download software updates or application updates, or, you know, anything like that, that obviously chews up bandwidth and can chew up a lot of it very, very quickly, because this LTE stuff is really fast. So you wind up with this problem on your iPhone or iPad. There's no real way to mitigate this if it's connected to a Wi-Fi network. Like if you connect your iPhone to your iPad's Wi-Fi network, it does not know that it's an LTE based data connection. On your Mac, you can install something called RubberNet. And I think actually, from what I hear, I think Mavericks will help with a lot of this, but in the certainly in the interim and maybe even long term, RubberNet is what you want. RubberNet gives you way more insight. It granularly tracks what your Mac is doing on the network and really can give you a lot more insight, both real time and long term monitoring. So you can see what apps are using bandwidth in the moment, which iStat menus will also let you do right now. If you've got the network menu going, you can click on that and see the top five apps sorted by their current real time usage. RubberNet does that too, but it also tracks it over time. So you can take a look and say, oh, hey, wait a minute. You know, I see whatever, you know, software update daemon, or maybe it's just mail. Maybe you mail is syncing with the IMAP server and just being really chatty and blasting data all over the place. This will answer your question. And the user interface is, I mean, it's giving you geeky information, no doubt, right? But the UI is it feels like a Mac app, and it runs really, really well. So that would be my way of finding out what your Mac is up to on the network. John, you have any thoughts on that?
Well, there's finding out. So I have nothing to add on finding out, okay. But it sounds like the question here is there any way for me to control who is using the network?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, yeah. Okay. How much? Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one thing I got here, actually someone suggested this, and I actually am surprised I didn't think of it myself here, but someone in our chat room here suggested to use Little Snitch to block or to at least make you aware of who is trying to go out of your computer and access the network.
Yep.
Little Snitch, as we've discussed, is not for everybody. And it may annoy you, but it can tell you, but it could at the very least alert you to things that are using the network that you may not be aware of.
Is with Little Snitch, because I'm not a user of Little Snitch. Is there a way to set what I'll call sets? So like if I'm on my home network where I know I've got unlimited bandwidth, I can tell Little Snitch to allow all these, you know, this one set of apps. But when I'm on my LTE network, can I tell Little Snitch to allow a different set of apps and switch between them at will? Can I do that?
I haven't done that, though. I do see you can define temporary rules.
Okay.
I'm not sure I think you may be able to do rule sets. I haven't done that, but... Mm.
All right, because that would be a handy thing, right? You know, say, oh yeah, when I'm traveling, I would use this on my laptop, right? And maybe RubberNet allows this too, right? Perhaps it's worth digging in a little bit more, because it would be really handy to say, yeah, look, when I'm traveling, when I'm home, go ahead and download updates in the background. In fact, I want you to. I don't want you to wait for me to tell you. But when I'm traveling, just block that stuff. Don't even check for them, just block it, and being able to switch back and forth between that would be awesome, because that, you know, that's important stuff. Even on a hotel network where I'm not paying for bandwidth, but we all know that bandwidth is, like, you know, comes at a premium, I only want to be using bandwidth with the app that's in front, right? I don't want, if I'm watching a YouTube video, I don't want mail to go and check for mail, because I know that I'm on this limited, you know, pipe. And if somebody sends me a big attachment, mail's just going to say, send it down as fast as you can. You know, I don't want that. So that's interesting, John. This brings up good questions.
And actually, I just brought up something here. So yeah, I just brought up one of the windows in Little Snitch here, and they have something called automatic profile switching.
There it is. Profiles.
Right now, says it's disabled, but it says it can be enabled in preferences and allows you to assign networks to profiles. When you join one of these networks, the associated profile is automatically activated.
Oh, so
that's pretty groovy.
That's groovy.
Yeah, I think you may want to revisit it here for different reasons. I just like to know who's reaching out. Not so much, you know, I mean, a firewall takes care of people trying to get in, but this tells you who's trying to reach out. I find it handy, actually, a lot of times, especially after a software update, all of a sudden I'll see somebody new come up to, you know, like a new daemon or something saying, oh, the, you know, something D wants to phone home to Apple or somewhere. And I'm like, oh, that's an interesting addition to the OS.
Yeah, see, this is good. And Little Snitch, in its own way, does tell you who's using bandwidth in real time. I don't think it monitors it over time, but it may, but it certainly monitors it in real time. So you can see, you know, and iStat menus also helps here, too, because you get it right in your menu bar. You can see how much bandwidth you're using. And then, OK, you know, I want to know more. And again, iStat will tell you that. But then you can start limiting it with this. Yeah, this is good.
Dave.
Yeah,
here's another one. Now, I've done this once and I think it's still something you can do here. But wouldn't it be great if you could limit the bandwidth?
Yes.
Wow.
And you can with the firewall, right? If I mean, you can do that with something like Waterroof. You can build a
exactly.
Okay. Is that where you're going with this? Sorry. Okay.
Yes. Well, actually, I found it here. So actually, I'll link to, so you know what, we'll put this in the Lovingly Handcrafted show notes, which actually I create with BB Edit.
Ah, there you go.
It's a great HTML editor as well.
We create them with Google Docs during the show, and then you update them with BB Edit. But go ahead.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
But actually, a Mac OS X Hints article, says this. It gives you ways to from the command line to invoke this. And yes, it involves what's called IPFW, which is the firewall that is buried in OS X. And one thing you can do is limit bandwidth on a specific port to a certain rate. So this could be this could be another way to try to manage, you know, what happens. You know, of course, what we suggested is if you can just block it or try not. So the first part is, learning what is phoning home. The second part would be to use this here and this, you know, IPFW or, like you said, Waterroof or something that's a nicer interface to
right.
When you're on this port, please limit the bandwidth to however many kilobits or megabits per second.
And actually, Waterroof or, you know, IPFW would also allow you to just limit your entire bandwidth on the Wi-Fi interface to be, you know, no more than say 512K a second. Now that might drive you crazy if you're trying to download something, but it at the very least, it would prevent your computer from sucking up too much bandwidth too quickly. You know, so there's no perfect solution here, but there are the tools to build your customized solution, both in the short term and the long term. That's good. I might have to revisit Little Snitch about this, John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll keep at it.
Yeah, no, it's good.
I will convert you.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't need to be pestered by it, but...
I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Huh. Yeah, if I could stop software updates from happening anywhere but home. Huh. I like it. This is good. I think you could
because there's a specific because you can see when they try to phone home and do software updates, you'll see it connecting to a specific server at Apple. I think it's SWUpdate or whatever it is.
Yeah, but it's also just an engine, right? I mean, there's an app a process, I should say, that runs and does it. Yeah. Sweet. All right. Well, that was good. I like that. I love it. So you want to take Alejandro for a spin here, John, his question?
Alejandro, yes.
All right.
All right. So, hi, guys. Thank you for all you do. You're welcome. I recently purchased a MacBook Pro 15-inch with Retina display, and I'm loving it. And I sold my old iMac 2009. Before I erased the hard drive and delivered it to its new owner, I made a super-duper clone backup. In addition to a time machine and a crash plan backup. Excellent. Multiple backups is good. I have all my stuff externally, like iTunes and iPhoto libraries. So when I get the new computer, all my stuff was there as soon as I plugged in the external drive. My question to you is how to transfer emails. I had on my Mac, or how to transfer emails I had on my Mac to the new computer. I had several folders where I used to put emails containing my software licenses, receipts, etc. I created the folders locally on purpose so I could use them as an archive and to avoid crowding up the server. But now I don't have access to those folders inside my new mail app. What would you recommend would be the best way to move those folders to the new computer? And there are a number of ways to do it. So I'm going to offer several options here.
Okay.
So one thing to try would be to run mail app on the new system, then go to File, Import Mailboxes. You will then get a list of options, and one will be Apple Mail. So then select that, and then navigate to where you have the mailboxes stored on the backup. And that should be somewhere in your user directory, library, mail, or thereabouts. Or that's where I pointed. It will then scan for mailboxes, and once it's done scanning, it will list the ones that you can import. So to me, that's probably the best way to do it, and the Apple-approved way. So another option, which also, you know, gets pretty specific, or you can export specific mailboxes, would be to boot from the clone. Hopefully you can still do that. I don't see why you wouldn't be able to. Then run mail on the old machine, select each mailbox that you want to export, and then control click on it and select export mailbox. What that does is creates a .mbox file. And then what you do is go to the new system, you run the same import mailboxes dialog, but in this case, instead of selecting Apple Mail, you select files in mbox format. And that's the other way to do it.
Those are
two ways that are specific. Now, there's actually the last time I did this, there's a couple of other ways you could do this. So one is, and actually I did this when I had to rebuild my MacBook Pro, is you could just take the mail folder and just copy the whole darn thing over. And I think you probably also want to copy over the com.apple.mail.plist file, which crazily enough is now located in /containers/com.apple.mail/data/library/preferences. So that's option number three, and I've done that and it works.
Option number three works. But if he specifically only wants the stuff that's in the, you know, quote unquote on my Mac group, you can get it a little more granular, and you can go to the mail folder, which is inside library, like you said, John, mail. So home folder, library, mail. And to get to home folder, library, as many of you know, you have to go to the Go menu with the option key down and choose library. Once you get there, then go to the mail folder. Inside that will be a V2 folder. And inside that, you will see a series of folders. There will be one each for each online mailbox that you have. So your IMAP mailboxes, your POP mailboxes, your me, your Mac.com mailboxes, however you set them up originally, iCloud will be there. And there'll be a couple other folders, one of which is called simply mailboxes. That folder is the local stuff on your Mac. They're listed as .mbox files. They're actually more than that, but it's okay. It would work to simply copy those quit mail on the machine that you're copying to, at the very least. And then just copy those into the corresponding mailboxes folder on the live machine, and then you're good to go. That will bring them in. You might need to use something like in that mail folder is something called envelope index. Mail might be smart enough to re-index this stuff, but if you just delete that envelope index before you launch mail, it will then force it to re-index everything and get you back up in business. So that would be a very granular way of just manually pulling the on my Mac stuff into your new Mac. So,
okay. Yeah. You kind of beat me to the punch here. To wrap it up. No, you brought up a good point. So one, yeah. So of course, if you copy over just the entire mail folder, it's going to copy over everything.
Right.
And then the last option I offer, though, I don't even know if I should. Well, I'll mention it. I think Migration Assistant may also do this, but in the case of either copying over the entire mail folder or using Migration Assistant, as Dave suggested, it's going to copy over everything, and then you got to delete or prune what you don't want. So right. I think you should probably just ignore the last two solutions and use the import mailboxes.
Yeah, import mailboxes is easy. Mail. Right. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it right, because then it manages the indexing and all of that stuff. So, yeah, I agree with you. I agree. Okay. How are we doing on time? We have we can do this one last one, and perhaps this will loop itself into being a geek challenge of sorts. Jocko writes, I am baffled by iTunes behavior. I'm running the latest version of iTunes on the latest version of OS X Mountain Lion. I recently spent many hours updating the tags of my music tracks, specifically the comments field, in order to tag the tracks with multiple genres. Now I've realized that as soon as I play the track, the metadata is read from the file and my changes in iTunes are overwritten. So it seems that iTunes' own database has my comments and tags, but isn't writing them to the file. And whenever the file is read, the file's metadata, the song's metadata, overwrites iTunes' own metadata. iTunes Match is switched off, so it's not coming from there. And although my iTunes library or my iTunes music folder is located on my NAS drive, Adrobo FS, I have verified that it is not a permissions problem by right-clicking on a track, selecting Show in Finder, and then changing the name of the file. This action is successful and therefore verifies that at least I, and presumably iTunes, has the permissions to change it. Also, Preferences Advanced Keep iTunes Media Folder Organized is ticked and always has been. So I've run out of ideas. Why is iTunes not committing my changes to the files? The only remaining option is to edit the tags with a third-party editor in the files themselves. But since I've spent a weekend on the tagging, I'm trying to avoid redoing it. Any idea how I can force iTunes to commit my changes and tags to the file? All the files are AAC files, which are iTunes format. Okay. The first thing I would try, we want to narrow down where this problem lives, right? So the first thing I would try is let's go into iTunes preferences and uncheck that keep organized checkbox that you mentioned, right? And then let's bring in a new file, MP3 or AAC, it shouldn't matter. Although that would be a good thing to test too, see if this sticks with MP3s versus AACs. And, you know, I don't think you're going to find anything there, but with troubleshooting, I have learned to never rule anything out until you have ruled it out, until you have proof as to why you should rule it out. So once you uncheck that, go in and add a new song and just add it from your main hard drive. Don't put it on your Drobo. Just add it, you know, from your desktop or whatever. And because you're not doing the keep organized thing, iTunes will just leave it there and then go and change that song's metadata. And see what happens and look at the file update times of that file and see if iTunes updates it. It should. There should be an immediate change to that file. And if there's not, then you know that something's wonky with potentially with your. If that's the case, we know that we can write to the file. We know it's not on a NAS drive. So there might, you know, I know you tested the permissions, but there might be a thing going on there. So go and edit that file and make sure that works. Then once you've done that, then go in and recheck your keep organized box. And then in order to incorporate this file into your iTunes library, do the go into iTunes, go to the file menu, go to library, go to organize library and do the consolidate files. That will copy this to your Drobo and iTunes will update its location. You can then delete it from your desktop. And you want to look at this file on your Drobo and repeat those steps of updating the metadata inside iTunes and checking the update times on the file and make sure that it's updating things. Because again, you know, we want to try this in various different ways and figure out what combination of it does. And most importantly, doesn't work. So you know where your problem lies. If it's happening right up front, if it won't update it when it's just on your hard drive, that tells me that your iTunes library file itself might be damaged. And if you want to test that, you can do so without losing what you already have. Quit iTunes, relaunch it with the option key held down. You'll get a window that that allows you to create a new library or choose a new library. But you can also create a new library, and then with that one library, try all these steps again and see where the problem lies. You know, try it with the files coming in on your hard drive without moving them into your library. try it with moving them into your library, but that library being on your hard drive in the music folder, and then relocate the library to a different folder on your Drobo and see how that goes. Hopefully, you know, I know we're just talking about troubleshooting kind of in the abstract here, but that's how to get to the bottom of this kind of problem. You definitely have a problem. It definitely shouldn't be working the way you're experiencing. So the question is, okay, where is this specific disconnect? And my gut says that it's probably your iTunes library file is damaged, because it should be updating those files on your hard drive immediately. So unless your Drobo is blocking that from happening, it would almost have to be the iTunes library itself. And that, unfortunately, that's not a fun fix. We'll put some links in the show notes as to how to recover that, and that might help or might not. So any thoughts on this, John?
Fish shake. No, I agree with you. Yeah, the file has to be something's damaged, and I think it's probably something a bit more complicated than repair permissions. Maybe it's just
No, because there wouldn't be permissions on his on his Drobo, right? I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. So because external drives don't, you know, repair permissions. Actually, that's an important thing. Repair permissions touches nothing in your user folder. It does not muck with the permissions of your data. It only mucks with the permissions of system files that are required for the system to work, but it does not mess with your user folder.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah, so, we have that tip. Yeah, if you do, you actually have to... It's a secret place somewhere. Yeah, it's kind of hidden away, but there is a way to repair user permissions.
There is, and it's called YASU, yet another system utility. You can do the magical way, but YASU, which is available for free at yasuapp.com, will let you repair your user permissions. And that would be more helpful here than repairing system permissions, again, only for the system. It leaves your user folder alone. So, but yet another system utility from, I can't remember the guy's name because it used to be in his URL and now it's changed. Jim Mitchell, if my memory serves me right. So there you go. Well, he says he's not developing it for Mavericks, but that's okay. Still works now. So there you go. For a short period of time, YASU is the right way to do it. Hopefully somebody else will come out with something, because otherwise you got to do this whole terminal invocation thing. All right. Good. Right? Yes, John?
I guess. Yeah. No, I just found the article, How to Repair User Level Permissions in Mac OS X, written by Jim.
Jim at Mac Observer. Oh, that's great. Let's put that in the show notes too. That'll be good. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, I suppose that brings us to the end of yet another fun-filled, action-packed Mac Geek Out.
Action-packed?
It was action-packed. Yeah, I thought so. It was good stuff. All right. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com is the address that you can send your comments, tips, questions, screenshots, screen captures, anything you like, send it to us. We'd love to get it. And if you get a reply from us, you'll get our key, our S/MIME key, and then you can encrypt stuff back to us if you have done the email security thing that we've been talking about in the last couple episodes. And tons of you have. It's awesome to see all these keys coming in. So if we reply to you by default, if you send your key, we will encrypt our reply just because it's fun. If you'd prefer it not to be encrypted, let us know so that we don't screw you up.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't had I told you I had an issue with my ISP, but then I found the right person who was able to fix that.
That's good.
Some systems may reject I think it's a S7M attachment, or at least mine did until I yelled at them. But yes, Dave, you said feedback@MacGeekGab.com.
That's right, feedback@MacGeekGab.com. And of course, that's not the only email address. Some of you qualify to use the premium@MacGeekGab.com email address, and that's those of you that are actively supporting us as premium subscribers. And those of you that have hit or that hit by February, and yes, we know it took a long time, hit your $100 threshold, you have started receiving, some of you have received, many of you have received. In fact, I think by this point, nearly everyone in the U.S. has received your Mac Geek Gab water bottles that we put together for you with the Mac Geek Gab logo and, of course, our catchphrase on the back. So those of you overseas, we are sending them to you because we said we would. And so they're on their way. It just takes a little bit of time but they've all been sent out as far as I'm aware.
And you can also put different beverages in there, not necessarily water.
I would be careful with carbonated beverages because yes, it is a sealed container.
They do warn you about that. There's an insert. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't want it. You don't want to test the pressure limit of the bottle.
Maybe we
hold no responsibility.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you would love to test that. Listen, that's your thing though. That's good.
Yeah. If you do Coke and Mentos, you're on your own.
Oh boy. Actually, that sounds like fun. Never mind. All right. So, Sunday afternoon experiment. 206-666-GEEK is the number to call. And geek is John?
4-3-3-5. You can also, let's see, facebook.com/MacGeekGab. That is where you will, you can see an event telling you when the next show will be. Yep. You can also post on the wall, and we've had some interactions there, posting questions.
Find us on Twitter.
Yes, Dave, and where can they find us on the Twitters?
Well, MacGeekGab is MacGeekGab. You are John F. Braun. Pilot Pete is Pilot Pete. When he's there, when he's here, Mac Observer is where you get all TMO's headlines. And of course, on Twitter, I'm Dave Hamilton. And that's that. I think that's it. MacGeekGab.com/stream is where you will find us. I think the next 4 weekends, we're on Sunday morning Eastern time is what our schedule looks like. I love these Sunday. We're good in these Sunday morning shows. I think it's our best time slot in terms of the quality of product that we produce. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Once we get our stimulant of choice introduced into our system.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's right. That's right. All right. With that, I thanked Michael Johnston. So thank you, Michael, for doing the conversion. You rock, my friend. CashFly, of course, rocks as well. CACHEFLY.com provides all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. The podcast marketplace includes BB Edit and Yojimbo from Barebone Software, Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label from Smile, Gazelle.com, Squarespace.com with the MGG9 coupon code for 20% off. It is good stuff out there. Don't forget about CrashPlan, CRASHPLAN.com for your online backups, too. And if you are going to take if you are a premium supporter and you reached your threshold and you've gotten your water bottle, before you pour Coke and Mentos into it, you want to gaze upon the beautiful Mac Geek Gab logo on the front and then spin the bottle. No, don't lay it down and spin it. We're not playing that game. Spin the bottle on its base, 180 degrees, and read the back. Because if you're going to put Coke and Mentos in, you want to make sure, you want to make darn sure you don't get caught.
Made up.